I'm Ed Randall, and you're listening to Baseball and Barbecue.
This is Greg Lazinski, and you're listening to Baseball BBQ.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of the Mets Musings Podcast, and you're listening to Jeff and Len on Baseball and Barbecue, one of my favorite podcasts, and I know it's one of yours, too. The only problem is, after I get done listening to it, I'm hungry. All right, guys, take it away.
Welcome to Baseball and Barbecue, episode number 61. We are the podcast which helps you with one of life's major, major decisions. Should I listen to a baseball podcast or should I listen to a barbecue podcast? With us, you don't need to decide.
You can do
both. Leonard Averman.
I'm Jeff Cohen.
I was going to call you my magnanimous host, Jeff Cohen.
Go ahead.
I'm joined by my magnanimous co-host.
Thank you very much, Leonard. Thank you very much.
Will. Were you doing Elvis?
Thank you very much. Yes.
That's very good. We couldn't be more excited to be with you. Yes, many of you, we are stuck at home, thus the opening music. But you know what? If you're going to be stuck with us, if we're going to be stuck at home, let's do it right. So let's bring you a triple play, right, Jeff? What's one of the most exciting plays in baseball?
A triple play is a tiny defensive play. One of the best offensive plays is a triple. It's more exciting than a home run.
Right.
You run a leg out of triple.
You don't see a lot of triples these days.
No, right? they really decreased over the years.
Yes. We're going to start the show with none other than Brett Topel.
Woohoo!
Jeff, why don't you tell us quickly, well, you know what? As we get to each one, we'll introduce them. And we're going to have Brett Topel, followed by Ray Sheehan, followed by Dave Dresser and Shel Krakowski.
That's a triple play.
Yes. Any way you look at it, that is going to be a triple play. I don't think there's much that we should really do as far as talking. Do you?
Well, I can tell you, if you want to reach the show, give us a call, 516-855-8214. Email us, baseballandbbq@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our Facebook page. Tweet us, we're at baseballandbbq. We have Instagram, it's baseballandbarbecue, where barbecue's all spelled out. Check us out on our YouTube page, baseballandbbq. And of course, our website where all our other episodes are located, www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com.
And you know what? I'm going to contradict myself. I just said we really shouldn't do much talking, but we do have to mention some of our past episodes, especially the episode that we put out as a bonus last week.
Right.
Darren Heitner.
Yes.
If you haven't heard Darren Heitner's interview and you're a big baseball fan, you really should. That's a great episode. Timely, relevant, talked a lot about what's going on now with the current state of baseball not being played. His thoughts on what's going to happen with the season, if a season even happens. What do you think of that, Jeff?
Yeah, I totally agree. It was very rare we get a distinguished sports attorney, mm-hmm. One of the best. He told us our thoughts. He knows the business. He knows what goes on being an attorney for athletes, and he used to be an agent.
So right.
He knows what's going on. So, yeah, definitely right. Check out episode 60 if you have not. Also, check out episode 59, because we had none other than Russ Salzburg and John McGuire.
For anyone who doesn't know, Russ Salzburg has been a staple in sports in the tri-state area, in our tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, for 30 years, had stories to tell that were terrific, had a great relationship, a very special relationship with Yogi Berra, my favorite Yankee, and the stories that he told and how genuine he is as a person. It was really great interview. And then, of course, John McGuire, Johnny Mags, has his own podcast, Pit Life Barbecue, and he was a great guy to talk to. So if you haven't heard prior episodes, you should go back and listen to them.
Speaking of great guys, why don't we start off with our friend, Brett Topel.
Our guest is making his triumphant return as he was our guest in episode 17. He seems to have the Midas touch, as the books he writes are fantastic, and now his latest project, BT Talks Baseball, is wonderful to watch. His books, When Shea Was Home, the story of the 1975 Mets, Yankees, Giants, and Jets, Miracle Moments in New York Mets History, So You Think You're a New York Mets Fan, and Simply the Best, the story of the 1929 to 1931 Philadelphia Athletics, are all incredible reads. His newest project, BT Talks Baseball, is only 4 episodes in, but you can tell it will be a success. We are so glad to welcome Brett Topel back to Baseball and Barbecue. Welcome, Brett.
Well, Len and Jeff, thank you so much for having me back. It's a pleasure to be here.
You started this great video series of yours called BT Talk Baseball back on, looks like, March 27th with your first guest, John Malik. What was the impetus to start this video thing you got going?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I can't thank you guys enough for having me on to talk about BT Talks Baseball. And I think, I'm sure as you guys both were feeling the same way, you know, that was right around when it's supposed to be opening day weekend and there was no baseball to be had. And, you know, I was just trying to think of a way to keep baseball relevant. And certainly, you know, I was missing baseball. I knew I was going to be missing baseball. And I've always kind of had this little dream of having some sort of a baseball video podcast, or call it what you'd like. And, you know, I figured this time right now was as good a time as any, because all I really have is time. So it started as an idea, and I set out to do a couple of them. And I wasn't sure initially if I was going to do it once a week, a couple times a week. And it was suggested to me to do it once a week. And so I decided to launch it on what would have been the first Friday of baseball. And like you said, we're 4 weeks in. This week is going to be the fifth, and I have at least 12 to 13 already, you know, lined up or taped. So I'm very excited about it.
Great. I mean, yeah, I really enjoy them. It's very, very great to hear these all-time players, and you have great introductions. It's just very fun to watch.
You've had John Matlack, episode 1. Frank Catalano. I butcher this name. Catalanato. I can't say it. Episode 2. And Marty Appel on 3. Edgardo Alfonso 4. And not only have you had them, but you also had intros from Fred McGriff, the crime dog, Dwight Doc Gooden, Kenny Albert. What do you have these people on speed dial?
Well, you know, the great thing about doing a podcast or anything like this when nobody can leave their house is they can't really duck my calls. So it's nice, actually. You know, I've been very fortunate. You know, it was very important to me that I started this with John Matlack for a number of reasons. You know, John, I've interviewed John for several of my books, including a book project that I'm working on now, which we haven't even discussed yet, but we certainly could. And John, to me, is the consummate Mets fan dream. He was a great player, of course, 1972 Rookie of the Year, played on the 73 National League Championship team. But more important than that, and by the way, I think he's one of the most underrated pitchers in Mets history. But more important than that, he's really just one of the greatest guys that I've come across in the game. He is very generous with his time, could not be nicer. So for me, it was personally important to have him be my first guest. And I wasn't really sure where this was going to go. Like I said, I did a few of them. Frank Catalanato is somebody I've known for a long time. I spoke to him a couple of days after he was drafted out of high school, and that was, you know, in 1992. And, you know, Marty Appel, I interviewed for my Shea book. So I went to some contacts that I had. And I have to tell you, it's kind of blossomed. I have some really exciting upcoming guests, who I'm sure we'll talk about,
yes,
you know, on this episode. But it's been a lot of fun so far.
That's great. Go ahead, Ben.
I was going to say, you're making it very easy. So you mentioned a book, so I'm going to definitely ask you about this project. And then you mentioned upcoming guests, so that'll be next. So I could just rip up these questions because basically you're leading me into everything. And Jeff,
I'm just trying to make your job easy.
I can't pronounce his name. I'm like the mad dog of this show. I can't do mad dog, but with the mispronunciation. All right, so Brett, tell us about the book. Tell us about the upcoming book.
Sure. So the book is nobody knows about this book. I have not posted anything about this book. The contract is signed, so I can't tell you. So I always wanted to do something featuring top players in Mets history, and there's some great books out there about this. But I was also always fascinated with the concept of the whole Mount Rushmore of franchises, but with the belief and the understanding that, you know, the top four players that I feel might not be the top four players that my father feels or my grandfather feels or my son feels. So I really wanted to write a book about Mets Mount Rushmore by decade. So I pitched that to my publisher, and we went back and forth for a number of days and weeks, and he loved the idea. He loved the idea right away. We went back and forth for a number of days and weeks just negotiating. But he liked the idea. He actually liked it as a series idea, actually, because this could apply to all teams. You know, the Mets have been around only since 1962. Of course, that's, you know, more than one generation at this point. But like a team like the Yankees or the Cardinals, you know, it's impossible to pick four people. Nobody past, you know, Mickey Mantle can get on there. So I think that it would, not unlike my Miracle Moments book, which, you know, I picked the 31 top moments or what I felt was the top moments in team history. You know, this book will be part history book and part argument starter for Mets fans, because perhaps who I picked as the four best players in the 70s or the 80s or the 90s or whenever might not be your four top Mets. So, and there's going to be little twists and turns within the chapters. We're going to have I don't want to give away everything, but I will tell you that I'm not only going to talk about the four best players of each decade. I may talk about some trade busts, and I may talk about the prospects that never were. So, you know, you guys are very well aware of my other books. It's going to be written in that same sort of narrative style. I write books the way I hope and think people want to read them, just a nice conversational story. And I'm a storyteller. And so my key with this book is to interview as many people as I can who, you know, are relevant for this, whether they were on the Mount Rushmore or, you know, whether it's somebody like, you know, Sean Green, who played for the Mets and, you know, played with some of these players who are on the Mount Rushmore. And if I can, as long as I have them for the book, they are now, I'm luring them into BT Talks Baseball.
All right.
I'm double dipping.
Right. When do you expect the book to come out?
Time has changed, right? So we've been on the same day for about the last 5 weeks, right?
Right.
The way it was originally planned and the way I'm still hoping it will be planned is that it will be out in time for opening day of 2021, which is hopefully not the next time we see baseball, but that is the initial plan. So I'm going to have to take a break from all my BT Talks baseball filming and actually do some writing, but I am excited about the project. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see where it leads.
All right, Len, I think we have a guest for next March and April.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And Jeff, you could write the intro.
Yes. Brett, getting back to the video series, BT Talks Baseball, the first four episodes was kind of New York-centric. Is that going to be the style is going to be New York-centric, or is it going to have other players from other teams?
Well, that's a great question. And one thing I neglected to say, and I know you guys know it from watching, is, you know, what was important to me is that these were very quick watches, you know,
yes,
for lack of a better term. You know, they don't go more than 7 minutes, give or take. And, you know, there's a few different segments within each episode. They all start with a baseball segment, interviewing a player or an executive. And I really wanted to focus for the most part on a specific moment in a player's career. Like John Matlack, I could have talked to for 4 hours and have in the past, but we just talked about his appearance in the 75 All-Star game. Frank Calinato, we just, I could say the name. I'm sorry, you should never insult your host. We just talked about his 6-for-6 game when he was with the Blue Jays. So I'm trying to talk about specific moments. But to answer your question more directly, yes, the first few episodes were New York-centric. I can tell you we're going to be taking a turn. This week's guest is going to be John Lieber, who pitched for a bunch of teams, but I'm going to be talking to him about the year he won 20 games for the Chicago Cubs. I have Jeff Blum, who hit a very, very key home run for the White Sox in the 2005 World Series, and they put a statue up outside the stadium to commemorate it. I have interviews coming up with players like Glendon Rush, who did play for the Mets, and Mickey Morandini. I also have some surprises. I'm going to go stray a little bit from baseball, but talk about baseball. They'll all be somehow related to baseball, but I have some actors and some comedians, and I'm really going to try to mix it up a little bit to keep it interesting. I never wanted it to be, despite my fandom, I never wanted it to be a Mets video podcast. I didn't want it to be that narrow, although every episode you could see behind me where I film, there's a picture of Todd Pratt rounding the bases after the home run. There's a celebration of the 86 Mets, and there's a photo of me and Gary Carter from years and years ago. So I'm certainly not hiding from the fact that I'm a Mets fan, but I didn't want this, and I don't want this to be a Mets podcast. Although, you know, if it gravitates towards Mets and Yankees, that'll just be a natural pull for me.
So Jeff Blum gets a statue outside of Chicago Stadium for hitting a home run. We have to wait over 50 years for Tom Seaver to get a statue. Could you explain that?
Ooh. Yeah, I can't explain that, but I want to stay in the good graces of the Mets management for now.
Yeah, he needs to do that. Brett, first of all, for anyone that hasn't seen it, your BT Talks Baseball, it's on YouTube. It's fantastic. It really is. It's quick. I mean, I was surprised how fast they are. You have something on there that I had to watch every episode just to see this. You have Waiting for Perlman. Would you like to explain that? Because that, I love it. Love that.
Yeah, so, when I was originally coming up with the concept, I wasn't really sure what I was going to do, quite frankly, other than talk to baseball players. And I wasn't even sure how successful that was going to be. So I wanted there to be some element of music. And I was talking to a very good friend of mine, Elizabeth Glennon, who is a cellist. And she teaches cello. She's a performer. And I said, you know what? I would love if you would record a version of Take Me Out to the Ball Game on your cello so I could use it as my intro. I said, I've never heard a baseball podcast with a cello introduction. And that way I could say I have my own cellist, which I love. So, you know, I have always been, so the music element was there and the strings element, and I've always been a huge admirer of Itzhak Perlman, and coincidentally was supposed to see him perform for the first time. I've wanted to see him my entire life, supposed to see him in early April. Of course, that didn't happen. So I said, you know what? I need to somehow get Itzhak Perlman on my show. He's a big Mets fan. He's a big baseball fan. He's played the national anthem a number of times. How can I do this? And I don't even know why it came to me, but the movie Waiting for Guffman, which if you're familiar with, is a Christopher Guest movie. He's got a bunch of them, like Best in Show, Spinal Tap, and Waiting for Guffman is one of them. He's got a few more also. And they're kind of like these mockumentaries or farcical. It's hard to explain, I guess. I don't know what the genre is, but they're comedies. And the whole point of the movie was that this small town was putting on a play, and they were waiting for this big-time Broadway producer, Mort Guffman, to show up, so called Waiting for Guffman. So I said, you know what? It would be kind of fun if I do that with Itzhak Perlman. So that's kind of the story I tell on the first episode. And unfortunately, if you haven't seen the first episode, you might not know what's going on, but I do try every once in a while to repeat why I'm doing it, but I don't want to repeat the Waiting for Guffman each time. And then I just started coming up with the ideas, just kind of expounded upon themselves, and I thought it was funny. I actually you know, enlisted some help, as I'm sure you know, by I brought a friend of mine who is also a big Perlman admirer. And I have to say that I'm having so much fun doing it that although I would love him to come on, it would kind of ruin the vibe, right?
Right. Exactly.
I wouldn't be waiting for him anymore. I will say that this week's episode, episode 5, which features John Lieber, I have my friend Frank Grunewald on again. And in episode 6, I think is probably the most fun I've had with it. So you'll have to kind of wait for that for another week or so. But I'm not sure how long I can hold out. But until he shows up, or until I get tired of doing it, or until I think I can't be funny anymore, then I'm going to keep it going. I'll continue to wait patiently.
And we're all going to be waiting for Perlman. Brett, another feature you have on your series there is Mel's Memories. And I really admired awesome. That. I really liked that. First of all, I met your father at a book signing. Very nice man. I can see the apple doesn't fall from the tree. Kind of reminds me of my grandfather when he used to take me to ball games. He had all these memories. He went to Ebbets Field and old Yankee Stadium and all that. You know, it's such a nice feature that you have on there.
Yeah, tell us about your dad.
You want to tell us more about that?
Oh, yeah, I'd be honored to talk about my dad. I mean, of course, before I talk about my dad, let me just say that I love my mom, too. And I'm sure she's got tons of Audrey's memories she'd like to share. But I told her she's not allowed on the podcast. Sorry. My dad is everything to me. And I am a baseball fan. And I have my love for the Mets because of him. It starts with him. And, you know, during baseball season, we literally talk or text almost every night about the game. And we've been through the highest of highs and the lowest of lows watching the Mets as all Mets fans have. And, you know, but more than baseball, my dad and I love to laugh together and have fun. And one of the things we have a lot of fun with is my dad has the worst memory probably of anybody that I've ever met. He can't remember anything. He could tell you what he had for lunch in 1957, but he could not tell you what he had for lunch yesterday. And that's exactly true. So I didn't even really tell him I was going to be doing this. I just said to him, listen. And the other thing about my dad that's fantastic is he doesn't even ask me why I'm asking him things. He just goes along with it. So I set the recorder up and I just started having a conversation with him. And I said, listen, I think I want to use you as part of this podcast I'm going to be doing. Let's just sit down and talk. It was over the phone already because unfortunately I couldn't be in the same room as him, which is, by the way, you know, of all the things that are, you know, terrible about these times, and there's so many terrible things, and I consider myself extremely lucky because I, for so many reasons, but unfortunately I can't sit in the same room as my parents, which is a terrible thing. But I'm one of the lucky ones, so I'm not complaining. I said, give me some of your memories. And I had told him to think of some memories and I thought he would come up with a couple, and he came up with 4 or 5 right off the bat. And, you know, he's a one take wonder, you know, he just tells the memories and we go from there. And I wasn't even sure initially how many he would have and what time period they would all be for. And, you know, we've done like 7 or 8 or 9 of them already. And they've all been from his childhood. His friend Melvin Klein ends up in half of them, which is hilarious. And for a guy who grew up as a New York Giant fan and then became a Mets fan, he's got a lot of stories about going to Yankee Stadium as a youngster, but that I asked him about that later, and he said it was just he happened to live in the Bronx, and it was easier to get to Yankee Stadium than the Polo Grounds. But I love that my dad is a part of this, and I love the fact that you guys love that he's a part of it. You're not the only ones who have told me that they like the Itzhak Perlman segment, the Waiting for Perlman segment, but they love the Mel's Memories. And to me, that's just like, that's everything. So it's almost like the perfect little package for me, this podcast. And initially I did it for me and for, you know, some close friends. And, you know, the fact is I have, you know, people retweeting it and putting it on Facebook and sharing it like yourselves. And the fact, you know, I'm just doing this like goofy little podcast out of this small little room in my basement is kind of cool. It's more than kind of cool. So to have my dad be a part of it is awesome.
Brett, you just described our podcast, goofy little podcast out of our basement.
Yeah, but you have ribs. You have ribs.
That's true. And well, you have onions sauteing in a frying pan.
True enough. We can get together for this.
That's right. Explain that one, because people are gonna hear that. They're what?
I was inspired.
Yeah. So you know, I have to do my Itzhak Perlman research, and you know, I was forwarded by a link by that same friend I mentioned earlier, and she said, you know, you got to watch this because Itzhak Perlman talks about some things. You know, I'm trying to soak in as much about Itzhak Perlman because although I admire him, you know, I'm not a Itzhak Perlman scholar. And when one of the interviews he was doing, they said, you know, what, I think the question was posed like, what is the greatest sounds maybe other than music? And he it wasn't even the smell of the onions frying in the frying pan. He loved the sound of onions frying in a frying pan. So I believe it was on episode 2, I had onions frying in a frying pan to try to lure him on the show. And I believe after the scene of the frying pans, I said something along the lines of, if my boyish good looks don't lure Mr. Perlman, then perhaps these onions will. And, you know, and the onions keep coming up. And I have to tell you, people are texting me photos of onions frying in a frying pan. I had a good friend who actually sent me, there's an app now called Marco Polo where you could send little video messages back and forth to each other. And he sent me one just the other day he didn't even say anything, I don't think, but he just put onions frying in a frying pan and sent it to me. So that's taking on a little life of its own. So yeah, I have no shame. I will do whatever it takes.
Yeah. Again, like us.
Exactly. So Brett, you have your books, you have your podcast, your video podcast now. I know your communications, you have now a media company, BT5 Media. You want to tell us about what that's all about?
Sure. So BT5 Media was something I actually launched not that long ago. And the idea of that was that in addition, you know, one of my, you know, my real life job is I'm the director of communications at Buckley Country Day School, which is an independent school on Long Island and a fantastic place. And I've been there for 6 years and love it there. And one of the things I do there is I take photos, I make videos, I shoot videos, I make montages. So, and it's really one of the most favorite things that I do. I love that whole multimedia aspect, although it's not something I grew up doing necessarily. I grew up in journalism, but I've kind of morphed into this multimedia world. And I guess as the world has morphed into being multimedia. You know, BT5 Media, I decided I love shooting sports. So I thought it'd be a great idea to shoot some sports. I actually started with girls volleyball. A friend of mine runs a girls volleyball club, and I shot some matches and I shot some tournaments and put some things together. And the reaction and the response was actually really good. And I said, "Wow, this could be something interesting." You know, plenty of athletes need video highlight reels for whether it's for recruiting or just for fun. You know, the majority of athletes who, you know, it could be for kids as well. So volleyball turned into lacrosse, which turned into some other things. And, you know, it was just starting to ramp up when sports went away. So I am confident because I am staying, you know, we've joked a couple of times about what's been going on. It's certainly no joke, but I am confident we are going to get back to some sort of normal at some point, hopefully soon. You know, my goal with BT5 Media is to combine sports highlight reels, maybe some photo montages. Like I said, I'm a professional photographer as well. So, you know, I do have a website, bt5media.com. And on that website, you can kind of see the kinds of things I do. Actually, my shameless plug, and I'm jumping the gun because it's probably on your piece of paper to ask me also. But if you go to bttalksbaseball.com, www.bttalksbaseball.com, you can see all the episodes, plus be linked to my books, my book website and BT5 Media. So I appreciate you bringing BT5 Media up and for not cutting me off as I was doing a shameless advertisement.
Yeah, that's
we were going to ask you about that. How did people get in touch with you and all the social media places where you're at?
Jeff and I and you, we're all Met fans. And I was just thinking as you're talking about this, I was thinking Mount Rushmore for each decade. Now with the Mets, there are some pretty bad decades. So, I mean, they've been around since 62, I guess you could pick a good year or two out of each decade, but I'm wondering if you might have trouble picking a Mount Rushmore for one of the decades.
Well, you know, believe it or not, even though there were some really bad Mets teams, more bad teams than good teams, certainly, other than the 1990s, the Mets have been to the World Series in every decade that they've been in existence. You know, they made the World Series in 69 and 73 and 86, like I said, not the 90s, but they were there in 2000 and they were there in 2015. So there certainly was glimpses of strong players. And
that's true.
You know, I'm certainly not going to, you know, for the 60s, you know, it's going to be heavily pulled from those later 60s teams. From the 70s, it's certainly going to be pulled from those early 70s teams. From the 80s, I think it's pretty clear. I think the 80s is probably a slam dunk. The 90s, even though the 90s, they didn't go to the World Series, they had some great players. And I don't want to give away the Mount Rushmores, but, you know,
right.
90s is when, you know, you had guys like Alfonso and other type of people who I was lucky enough to have on BT Talks Baseball. In the 2000s, you know, you stretch from Piazza to the 06 team that didn't go to the World Series, but, you know, you got guys like Wright and Reyes. And the 10s and the moving forward, I did, you know, I'm going to do a chapter on the 20s, believe it or not, kind of a spin ahead chapter, is going to be more subjective. And to me, like, not unlike some other lists and, you know, books like this where you, you know, even my book, Simply the Best, which you were kind enough to mention about the Philadelphia Athletics, you know, I wrote that book and called it Simply the Best because my premise was that the Philadelphia Athletics of the 29 to 31, from 1929 to 1931 were the best team to ever play. But there's plenty of Yankee fans and baseball historians who feel that, you know, those Yankee teams of the 27, 28, and Murderers Row were the greatest. So, you know, it's subjective, but believe it or not, it wasn't that much of a hard pull, but some decades are harder than others, certainly. And there's some repeats too, right? I'm gonna, you know, spoiler alert.
Right.
Seaver is in the 60s and 70s. You know, Kuzman is in the 60s and 70s. I didn't have a rule where you could only be in one decade because, you know, Seaver broke in 67, and until he left, even, you know, he left. He was traded in 77, but in 77, but in 75, he still won the Cy Young Award, so he was still a viable superstar.
And a player can't be, let's set the ground rules here. A player that wasn't good with the Mets and then became a superstar, Nolan Ryan, Justin Turner. But if they're not Mount Rushmore worthy with the Mets, then they're not on it, right? Is that how it's going to work? Or you tell me.
That's correct. That's correct. Right. They make it at the end of each chapter for a couple of pages of trades that the Mets, you know, the Mount Rushmore players they traded away. Unfortunately, as Mets fans, there's plenty of players they traded away, and there's also plenty of prospects that never made it. The Mount Rushmore of Mets prospects that never made it, you know, I don't even want to go down the list, but it's Sean Abner, Lastings Millage, sure. Ryan Thompson, you know, a lot of five-tool players that toolbox was kind of empty.
Exactly. Brad, in episode 3 of BT Talks Baseball, you talked to Marty Appel, Yankee historian, former PR director. Director, he was the producer of the telecast. I love the story of him, how you met him. Would you be able to tell us, our audience, how you got in touch with Marty Appel?
Oh my God, yes! I'm very conscious of your remaining time we have here, so I'm going to tell it as quick as I can. But it's a great story, and it came during when I was writing my book When Shea Was Home, which was about the 75 season. Okay, let me see if I can tell this briefly. So I was looking for a Yankee source. I had a Mets source. I didn't have any Yankee source for that season. And I kind of put the whole idea of it away. And me and my wife went out to see a concert. And while we were at the concert, they were seating people with other people. And I hate that. I hate when they put strangers at my table. But, you know, I was in a good mood. I was seeing a performer that I really liked. So they brought this other couple over to sit with us. And turned out that it was a very strange thing, but that couple inadvertently was my daughter's preschool teacher and her husband. And we're like, oh, okay, Mrs. Ross. All right. You know, I didn't even care. I was being a little antisocial as I tend to be. Social distancing is not hard for me. I try to stay away. So she says to me, Mrs. Ross says to me, oh, you're into baseball. And I just felt this was going to be the start of a bad conversation. He goes, yeah, I'm into baseball. All right, well, you're fixing me up with your husband. He's sitting right next to me. I know. She goes, oh, and she's very nice. But this was a whole dialogue that was in my head. And she goes, oh, well, you should talk to, you know, my husband right here, because Larry, because he's cousins with Marty Appel, who's 75. Now, I missed the story up because I forgot to tell you. I forgot at the beginning of the story that I was trying to get in touch with Marty Appel for weeks leading up to this dinner, which I screwed up the whole story. So I couldn't get in touch with him. So she goes, you're cousins with Marty Appel. He's cousins with Marty Appel. And I said, I thought I was being like punked or, you know, whatever that old Jamie Kennedy show was. I said, come on. And he goes, no, Marty Appel's my first cousin. And I was just in disbelief that I had been looking for Marty Appel for literally 2 weeks. And now randomly this guy is Marty Appel's cousin. So he could have just said, oh, you're looking for him. That's nice. Yeah, I'm his cousin. But instead, he took out his cell phone, texted the guy, and told Marty Appel that I'm sitting with a gentleman by the name of Brett Topel. I had only written one book at that point, which was Simply the Best. So I really didn't even have a lot of credibility, certainly. But Larry Ross turned, I like to say that time, that he turned into a superhero for me, put his cape on. And, you know, the next day I was having a two-hour interview with Marty Appel. And it was a bizarre way to get in touch with him. And, you know, that bizarre way to get in touch with him stretched all the way till just a few weeks ago when I got to interview him for BT Talks Baseball. And you know, of all the players, like, I try not to be in awe of people as I'm interviewing them because, you want to be this authoritative interviewer. Marty Appel, I have three of his books on my – I'm not even a Yankee fan, and I have three of his books on my desk shelf here. He's just such a phenomenal writer. And, you know, as a writer, when you encounter another writer, and maybe that, like, I knew I wasn't going to be a baseball player, so talking to John Matlack or you know, Edgardo Alfonso, I was never going to be able to do that. But I aspire to be able to be a writer like Marty Appel, but I know that I can't be because he's just so phenomenal. That was really, you know, it's very, I consider myself lucky, and he's such a good man, and he's always been so generous with his time. And so a little bit of a wacky story, but so glad it happened.
Small world, you never know. You never know. That's amazing how you got in touch with him.
One of a couple of strange stories with that book, as you know.
Yes.
We had on Mark Healy on our last episode, and Marty Appel wrote the intro for his book.
Yes, and, Mark Healy's book. I've not read it yet. In fact, I'm going back and forth with him because I'm going to get a couple of copies from him, from me and my dad. I'm very interested in that book, and you guys did a great job with him last week. And yeah, really excellent talk. And I actually, Mark has done a couple of live video talks. In fact, I think, Jeff, I saw you on one of those as well. Yeah. Yeah, I wish him the best with that book. I feel really bad that, you know, anybody who's Brian Wright also had a great book that came out about some of the best Mets. And, you know, as somebody who has released books and the excitement over waiting for the book to finally get released and to have a book launch and to be able to have book events, that's such a high for an author. You know, the book only comes out once. You know, it's not like, I mean, you hope your book has legs and sells copies for an amount of time, but you know, there's only one, a book only has one book launch, and I feel terrible for those guys that are doing that now during this difficult time. But you know, the social media, those guys are grinders, man, and they're both grinding on social media, Brian and Mark, and I have both of their books on the top of my list, and you know, I'm thinking about having one or both of them on BT Talks Baseball as well, because really two solid writers, and you know, I think that their books are worthy of being discussed.
Well, I see we're running out of time here. Brett, you want to tell us where people can get in touch with you? We have Twitter, Facebook, you know, give us your plugs.
Yeah, sure. I'll mention my website again. That's absolutely the best way. It's bttalksbaseball.com. That's my website. You can get information. You can get right in touch with me there by sending me a message. You can get signed books. You can get linked to my book site, topelmetsbook.com or bt5media.com. I am on Twitter at btstuff. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. It's really not hard to find me. I'm pretty much, as Larry David said, says in Curb Your Enthusiasm, I'm around. So you can find me, but bttalksbaseball.com is the best way to see all the episodes right on my website.
Well, we wish you the best of luck with that. It's really fantastic. Len?
Yeah. No, it's great. I'm enjoying. I can't wait for I watched them so quickly, and I can't wait for the next one to come out. So when's it coming out?
They come out every Friday morning, okay. And the next one will be John Lieber,
nice.
Followed by Jeff Blum.
Nice. Looking forward to it. Brett, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Brett.
Man, thank you so much. Thank you, guys. I really can't tell you how much I appreciate you having me on. You guys do a great job, and I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Len, how do you like Brett?
Is there anything that he can't do?
He writes.
Now he does the videos. BT Talks Baseball is fantastic.
Oh, yeah, I love it. Comes out every Friday, and they're short. What is it, is 6, 7, 8 minutes long?
Right. I like his features. You know, it kind of reminds me a little of us, where he's got some features that are a little unique, like his Waiting for Itzhak Perlman.
Right.
Or Mel's Memories, which is his father talking about his baseball memories. And it's really, really good. And the last one, well, there'll be one, of course, when this episode airs, there will be one the day before. But he had on none other than the actor who
Greg Brady.
I know he's not Greg Brady.
Barry Williams.
Thank you. I couldn't think of his name. You look at him, it's Greg Brady.
Right.
He had on Greg Brady. And the connection was fantastic. Jeff, just quickly tell us the connection that he had with Greg Brady, because that was...
They were talking about the great Dodger first baseman, Wes Parker, when he made an appearance on the Brady Bunch. So that's the connection. He got right. He couldn't get Wes Parker, so he got Barry Williams, who played Greg Brady.
Right, because Greg Brady had a crush on his teacher, and she ended up, the fact she was dating Wes Parker. So, right. And then I guess Wes Parker gave him an autograph, and then
sent tickets, blah, 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 yeah. Right?
For tickets, so a great episode. Brett does a fantastic job with that.
Absolutely. BTTalksBaseball.com. Now, Len, who do we have coming up next?
We've got someone who anyone who's a fan of this show will recognize, because we've had him on before. He's a fantastic guy, none other than Ray Sheehan. Ray Sheehan of the company Barbecue Buddha, and he'll tell you all about that in the interview. But fantastic sauces and rubs. His sauces are amazing. They win awards. They're all natural. They're just, whether you're cooking, whatever you're cooking, will be great on them. And then, of course, we talk about his new book, Award-Winning Barbecue Sauces and How to Use Them, The Secret Ingredient to Next Level Smoking. And he actually gives you the recipes for the sauces, which he wins awards with.
Right.
Just a great interview. He's a great guy. Hope you guys enjoy it. Here's Ray Sheehan.
For all your barbecue aficionados out there, definitely this is a book that you need to have. So without further ado, here's Ray Sheehan.
Our guest is an award winner. His Memphis Mop barbecue sauce won best barbecue sauce in the world. His success with sauces and rubs has translated into a company which makes some of the best products yours truly has ever tasted. Now he has written the incredible cookbook, Award-Winning Barbecue Sauces and How to Use Them, which I can almost guarantee will elevate your barbecue to the next level. Let's hope the third time is the charm. Making his third appearance on Baseball and Barbecue is none other than Ray Sheehan. Ray, welcome back to Baseball and Barbecue.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's so good to be back with you guys. I feel like it's been too long, so I'm happy to be on.
Welcome, Ray.
It has been, and it's thrilled to have you on. But see, Ray, I'm going to start a little different here, okay? You cook, you know, you make award-winning sauces. Now you have a great cookbook. I figure your talents are endless. How are you interpreting dreams?
Not that good.
All right. Well,
I've only been able to interpret my own.
I need you and Jeff, put your heads together before we get into your incredible company and your incredible cookbook. Last night, I had a dream that I was Derek Jeter. I was 42 years old. I was Derek Jeter, and the season was about to begin, and I had a pain in my throwing elbow, and they told me that I needed Tommy John surgery. Now, for anyone who doesn't know Derek Jeter, because we have people that are just barbecue, Derek Jeter, Hall of Fame shortstop, about to go in the Hall of Fame, with the New York Yankees, played for like 20 years. What do you think that means?
You know, you're on the cusp of greatness, and you're holding yourself back with these injuries that you're portraying in your mind, but... You know, this Baseball and Barbecue podcast is really on the cusp of taking the barbecue and baseball world by storm.
That's it. That's why we have you on for a third time. Okay. There we go. Thank you, Ray. All right. let's talk about your incredible, incredible cookbook. You've got an intro by Bob Trudnack, the owner of Barbecue Guru. Incredible pictures, sauces. What made you decide to write a cookbook, Ray?
You know, I've always wanted to write a cookbook. I've been in the food world my entire life, and so it was something that was on my bucket list, but I never knew how I was going to get there. You know, I had no idea. And then when I met you at the barbecue expo, I ran into a friend of mine, Bill Gillespie, who's a world champion barbecue guy and a super nice guy. We were discussing his cookbooks, and I said, I write for the Barbecue News, the National Barbecue News magazine, and I do like recipes, and sometimes I'll do a product review or an article. And I said, you know, I'm working on these recipes and for a cookbook. And he said, who's your publisher? I said, well, I really don't have a publisher yet, but I'm just kind of like, you know, gathering information and working on recipes. And he said, oh, I should introduce you to my publisher. And I'm like, well, you know, that would be fantastic. And then a little bit, you know, a couple weeks went by and he made the introduction, and I pitched my idea to them. And then we came up with something that, you know, it was kind of like a series of steps. Like, I showed them some of the things that I was working on, and then they tested the recipes, and then we formulated a direction for the book. And they said, you know, you're the barbecue guy. You're winning all these awards for your barbecue sauces. You should write a barbecue sauce book, which ended up becoming not only award-winning barbecue sauces, but because there's 10 different sauces in the book that have won us or me awards for barbecue and for cooking. And so there's 50 ways to use them. So there's 60 recipes, but it's not just like a book filled with sauce recipes,
right?
60 sauce recipes. It's 10 amazing sauces and then 50 ways to wow your guests or your, you know, barbecue judges. So it was a process of refinement. You know, I had all these ideas and I had to whittle them down into a refined, concise plan of action to fill out the book. It was a process.
The book is fantastic. I've been looking through it. One of the things I like about it is that the introductions to each, I guess, chapter, for lack of a better word, is you give a little history of the barbecue sauce being used in those recipes. So you have Memphis and wherever else you have your
Kansas City
barbecue sauce.
Right, North Carolina,
right. So tell us about some of those, I guess, chapter headings.
So one of the things that my editor said was, you know, I want you to write a chapter intro for each barbecue sauce. And so I'm thinking about it and I'm like trying to decide what is the best way for the reader to capture these sauces. So history is a good way to give people, you know, a good base, a good background. So if I can tell you in each chapter opener what to expect in that region or in that style of sauce, it gives you a base. And then I wanted to let people know, this is the type of barbecue that you were going to get in Kansas City or North Carolina or Alabama. You know, this is the type of proteins that are used. This is the flavor profile. And these are some of the things to get people excited. These are the recipes that we're going to use to accentuate the use of the sauce.
That's great, because you know what happens is you see these sauces in all these cookbooks, right? And they give all these, you know, there's a long list. Maybe they have all these sauces, and maybe in this cookbook there's rubs, whatever. But then you don't know what to use them on. Am I using it on steak? Am I using it on pork? Am I using it on fish? Am I using it on, you know, on the ribs? On what? I mean, you really don't know. So the recipes are extremely helpful, because that way you have some guidance what you're using them on.
Oh, yeah. It's like when you go to a restaurant and you go to a higher-end restaurant, and you don't have to season the food because the chef's already done that. The chef has put this sauce with this protein, and that's what you pay for. You're paying for that experience of someone to guide you. Same thing with the book. My theory is that you can mix and match the sauces and the seasonings with the recipes and formulate your own flavor profiles. But I'm going to guide the reader to use this sauce or this rub that I think is really going to be a dynamite combination And it's my job to guide them there, to bring them those flavor profiles. Now, where you go with it after that, it's a totally up to the reader. It's up to you.
But I'm going to make a confession. I'm a barbecue fraud, okay? I said it. I'm a barbecue fraud because I've made rubs. I've smoked meat. I've done everything barbecue related. I have never made barbecue sauce. I don't know why, because it was always easier to, grab a bottle or whatever. But Ray, your book has definitely motivated me. I will be making homemade sauce.
Well, it's so easy, really. I mean, it's very accessible. All the things in the book, there's only really one ingredient out of 60 recipes that you may have to order or maybe at a specialty food store. Everything else is, probably things that you just have in your pantry or it's readily available at your local grocery store. In my Asian barbecue sauce, I do feature a secret ingredient of black garlic. Black garlic, for people that have never tried it, is really an outstanding way to consume garlic. It's almost, not quite fermented, but it's along those lines. It's more mellow. You would use it anywhere you would use roasted garlic. So it's okay to have a black garlic and a raw garlic in the same recipe because they're really going to give you different flavor profiles. The black garlic is more like a molasses-y kind of balsamic umami flavor versus the sharp, pungent flavor of raw garlic. But the majority of the recipes, everything's accessible. It's a comprehensive thing. There's tailgate appetizers, there's entrees, there's even a couple breakfast recipes because barbecue isn't just for breakfast anymore, right? We're trying to show people that you can really include barbecue in just about every meal. And there's various ways besides just using the sauce on protein. There's great side dishes, the breakfast. There's ways that you can infuse this barbecue flavor into all of your meals.
As Len said he'll be making barbecue sauce, I don't have that type of patience, so I will be purchasing right from BBQ Buddha. So... Anyway, your chapter on honey barbecue sauce, I find that really, you talk about springtime and how to create it, and some of the recipes look really good. I want to ask you about your thick-cut bacon skewers. Who's that kid who's enjoying the skewer?
That kid is my son, and he's, really thrilled. Not only did I dedicate the book to him because – I wanted to memorialize the fact that we spend so much time barbecuing together and I really appreciate the bond that we formed. Barbecue tends to bring people together. And that's one of the ways that we've been able to spend a lot of time together. So I really wanted to get him in the book if I could, if it made sense. And there he is with the bacon skewers and he's over the moon. And he was helping the photographer too. We had a great photographer, Ken Goodman. He's an A-list photographer. He's done a number of cookbooks, but a number of some of the top barbecue cookbooks that are out there, including Tuffy Stone's book. He's really a super nice guy, a trained chef, and he's also a championship barbecue guy. So he really knew how to bring my vision to the book. It was just incredible to work with him. He was the driving force of getting these pictures done in a timely manner. And it's all real food. There's nothing staged. We didn't paint anything with motor oil or cherry juice or any kind of... A couple of buddies came over. One guy brought his smoker. We cooked a myriad of food over the course of 4 or 5 days and one dish right after the other. So my son was pivotal in helping us get the dishes back into the kitchen, wrapping up food. So, his labor wasn't cheap either. We had to pay him too. We had to pay him in food and we had to get him in the book, but he was a big help. It was a really fun time. It was really, what a great way to spend, it was like in the beginning of July, we did the shoot and it was so much fun.
I would like to go to one of those because the pictures, I would get the book just for the pictures. I mean, those pictures look like you could eat right off the page. And you're right, this guy is amazing. So you have 4 or 5 days, couple of buddies, You're making all that food. Somebody's got to eat it. And one day, Jeff, that's what we want to do. You know, we have a bucket list of things, baseball and barbecue related, that we want to do. We have to get to a photo shoot for somebody who's doing a cookbook, maybe Ray's next book, and just be the recipients of the food. That's all. Because who is eating all that food, Ray?
I'll tell you what. I hope to get the opportunity to write another book. And when we do the shoot, I would love to have you guys come over and tape and eat.
Sounds like a plan.
That's number one. Number two is that I sent some food home with people. We donated some food. And then some of the food we had to save because, for instance, I do a full-on Packer brisket, like a Texas brisket. And then so the one recipe is for the flat. And then we do burnt ends. That comes from the point. And then there's another recipe in the book that's brisket baked beans. So I had to save some brisket for that to chop up the brisket and use for the pictures for the baked beans. And then there's a few other pictures in chapter openers where we're taking, you know, a protein that we had left that we needed something for the shot. So we did, you know, we had to save some of the food throughout the shoot to use for a different picture. And then a lot of the pots and pans and platters I was able to get from a flea market right down the street from my house, which is pretty cool because our move to this area, we moved our home and my business to this part of Jersey. So it was really cool to get stuff that was local, you know, to use in the book. And then I even was able to get for my beer canned chicken from Asbury Park Brewery, a Stone Pony. I don't know if you're familiar with the rock venue, the Stone Pony. Uh-huh. But so they partnered with the Stone Pony, the brewery, to create this beer. So I was able to use that beer for my beer canned chicken. So it was pretty neat. It's a little local flavor there.
You know, right. Some of these recipes here are so different. I've never even, you know, heard of it or whatever. And I really love to taste some of them. Tell us about some of this one I just came across, smoked Surf and Turf barbecue burger with barbecue aioli.
Aioli?
Yeah. That looks so good.
I'm a big Surf and Turf guy, and I often get it out. I usually just make it, you know, like some type of Surf and Turf. And I'm like, so I thought to myself, what would be a really cool way to Surf and Turf into the book? But something that anybody can do. Anybody can make a burger. You know, sometimes steak intimidates people, but a burger, who doesn't like a good burger? So I created this blend with, you know, that was designed to stay moist because it's going to be a little bit of a longer cook. And then I used the bacon wrapped shrimp from one of my other recipes to get the surf and the combination with the aioli, which is basically kind of like a barbecue infused mayo, kind of, you know, like that's kind of what it would remind you of. And that really sets it off. I mean, it gives it a little bit of a creamy barbecue flavor to the tender burger meat and the crispiness of the bacon with the shrimp. Oh, it's just outrageous. You really got to try it.
Oh, it looks so delicious.
My mouth is watering right now. Oh,
and that's all real food. I mean, you see the turkey burger in there. Uh-huh. That, I mean, like, I look at that and I'm like, wow, like we made that for this book. Sometimes I would look at it and be like, man, it's really cool. I must say, like, I'm very pleased with the way it came out. You work so hard to make it look good and taste good. You know, my goal is to inspire people to really cook. If you notice that book, I don't think you've received your hard copy yet, but it has a lay flat binding. So it's designed for you to just lay it on the counter and cook with it. Page Street Publishing, one of their things that they say is they like to inspire readers to do things that they love better. And this way, you can do it better because I collect cookbooks. And a lot of ones that I have, they don't lay flat. You've got to sit there and put something on it. It's closing. You're trying to, you know, if it's the middle of the book, forget it. You're trying to like hold it open. You have to buy a special thing. This just already has that lay flat binding. So that was one of the benefits of me getting my manuscript done by the deadline. So we could get it done and get that binding. So it's designed for you to cook with. I really want to encourage, inspire, and to teach people how to make delicious barbecue in their home and that it's accessible.
That's perfect, that the lay flat, because you're right. The cookbooks, you put them down. First of all, it's hard when you put them down. You want them to stand up. We had to buy like this plastic thing that, you know, it has to, it, the book goes in between, you know, right, for cookbooks. And then, of course, from constantly opening it to put the cookbook in, it cracked. It broke. So, so that alone is a great feature. So the pictures and the lay flat. Two reasons you got to get the book.
That's right.
And Ray, tell us about, I saw you posted something on Facebook about, you know, small businesses. And of course, right now we're all sheltered at home with the pandemic that's going on. You posted something about small businesses. You want to tell us about that?
I did post a couple things about small business. One of them was that GoFundMe, the GoFundMe website was, they were doing like kind of like a helping small businesses. So if you have a small business and you were able to start your GoFundMe, and it has to be a registered small business. And if you're able to raise $500, they would match it. So at least it's something. It's a little help just mm-hmm. to get you by. Sure. I put mine up there, and then honestly, I took it down because I felt like, you know, I'm okay. I don't want to detract from others that may need it, or in a worse position than myself. And mm-hmm. and what happens is when you get too many people, it's like it gets watered down. And like the Ruth Chris Steakhouse and these places that are, I mean, these are massive companies, and now they're coming to turn the money back in or whatever. I don't know. I may at some point, you know, have to revisit that, but I just felt like, you know what, I'm okay for the moment. And I'm very appreciative. You know, an article came out, not last night, the night before. I didn't, you know, every once in a while I do a search of the book because I want to see if anyone's writing about it. And somebody actually wrote this article and was like, you know, this Memphis mop is the best sauce in the world. It's official. You got to try it. This guy won this all these awards for it. And I'm like, wow, this is, I don't even know this person. This is amazing. Because of that article, I got like a ton of orders. So I'm very grateful for every order, every like, every share on Facebook. And even if you can't spend money to purchase, you know, the products, a like or a share on social media really does help because it exposes your product to others that may not have, you know, been aware of it in the past. And it's no cost to share, you know, to share a post on social media. So
right.
I'm very grateful for, you know, for you guys having me on, for everyone that supports us. It's not easy having a sauce business. There's a million sauces. Everybody's got a sauce or a seasoning. So it's really got to be good, and it's really got to be different to stand out. So I just want to say thank you to everybody out there for giving us a chance and trying it out.
Let us know where anybody can purchase your book. And I know it's hard right now at independent bookstores, but what websites or where can people order the book?
You can purchase the book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Book Depository, my website. You can purchase the book anywhere books are sold, basically. It's Award-Winning Barbecue Sauces and How to Use Them by Ray Sheehan, obviously. And my website is bbqbuddha.com. That's bbqbuddha, BUDDHA.com.
And Ray, you know, you mentioned there are a million sauces. There are also a million podcasts. So we know, you know, there may not be as many barbecue podcasts, but baseball podcasts, there are definitely a million. So we know exactly, you know, we're in that same boat.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the things that you really have to work hard at distinguishing yourself in any business these days. And right now it's a tough time for everybody. So the good thing is people are home and hopefully staying safe and they can listen to us ramble on about baseball and barbecue and baseball. So, yeah. You know, it's it gives them kind of something to do and something to look forward to. How can you go wrong with the two best guys here?
Yeah. You, thank you. The check will clear, Ray.
Right. Ray, I'm going to challenge Leonard to
Here we go.
To make your moink balls. getting back to the book, meatballs look very appetizing. I guess it really for appetizers, not for a main dish, but they look really good. Can you tell us how you came up with this?
Well, it's not something that I necessarily created. That's one of those dishes that you hear about when you're at barbecue right. contests or tailgating. Mm-hmm. And traditionally, and they're a not so traditional dish, but I see a lot of people stuff them with little cubes of cheddar cheese or mozzarella cheese or whatever, jalapeno jack cheese, you know, whatever kind of thing you like. I didn't stuff them with cheese for the book because I already had a cheesy smoked meatloaf and there was a lot of cheese in, you know, certain dishes. So I wanted to leave it kind of up to the reader, but it's basically a meatball is beef, is where you get the moo, and the oink you get from pork. So you take those two proteins, mix them together, and you're going to rub them and wrap them in bacon and put a little rub on that, smoke them, and then glaze them with one of these fantastic sauces. So you get a sweet, smoky, kind of a savory bite all in one.
And Ray, the sauce is, your sauce is also, you can get at barbecuebuddha.com, right?
Yes, the sauces and right. rubs you can get at bbqbuddha.com, yes.
What's next for Ray Sheehan?
Well, we are, we're treading water right now. I have a few products kind of waiting that are pretty much done. I have a barbecue-infused hot sauce I've been working on for the last year and a half. And then I have another barbecue sauce that I'm still testing, but it's pretty much right there. But at the moment, I'm kind of on hold. Right now, I just want to keep the products that I have in stock and get through this little bit, you know, of everything that's going on with the crisis and the pandemic.
Of course.
But hopefully when that's over and we start to resume getting back out there, that's what would be next for me, would be those two new products, even if we stagger them one at a time, you know.
Ray, I want to get back to your book with the sauces for another minute. One of my favorite sauces, I have a partiality toward Asian barbecue sauce. And you have a couple of recipes in your book for Asian barbecue sauce, which I'm definitely going to use. This is really looks really good. And I'm going to try the barbecue sticky ribs with the Asian sauce. They look really, really good.
That's one of my favorite sauces in the book. It's so different. It's really loaded with umami flavor. You know, it's like kind of lingers on your palate, keeps you wanting to come back for more, but it's not overly sweet. It's not, it's a very well-balanced sauce. You know, it has all the usual suspects, like, you know, the ketchup base, but then what it does is, you know, it gets brightened up with hints of ginger and five spice and hoisin. It's an outrageous sauce. And I mean, if you don't make it, you're really missing out. And it's really a standout sauce. There's five different ways to use it in the book. You know, everything from the sticky ribs to, you know, beef on a stick. It's really delicious. It's one to try.
You had to pick now, when we're social distancing and I can't come over to say you're going to make that. That's not fair.
I'm sorry. But don't miss out on the black garlic. Don't skimp on the black garlic for that recipe. You could probably get it at a lot of different specialty food stores, I'm pretty sure. I order it from Black Garlic Market in Pensacola, Florida. You can find them on Facebook, Black Garlic Market. They make a black garlic honey that's like outrageous, and black garlic mustard, but basically the black garlic bulbs. I actually did an article on them for the Barbecue News magazine. It really gives it that savory umami flavor that once, you know, you want to just keep coming back for it. It's really good.
Ray, you started as a baker, right? You started.
I did. Right? I, you know, many years ago, I worked in the produce market. And next door was a restaurant, and I used to go after work, and I was like 15, and I would take the bus to this job, and I would go next door and I would watch the chef, and he said, okay, stand there, and he would make Dutch's potatoes and all different, you know, prime rib. And I've always been interested in food, and I've had so many different jobs in the food realm, from a dishwasher to baker. I was a baker for a long time, actually. and I learned so much from there, and just about so many different things, how to be in business, I make this really great cheesecake. Let me tell you, when you come over, I gotta make it for you.
No.
But I've had so many different jobs in food. And right before I was, and I talk about it in a book, like I even did an apprenticeship. I was a baker. I would work from 4 a.m. until about noon. And then I would go work at this restaurant, which happened to be a really highly regarded restaurant in my area. And I learned about sauce making and knife skills. I mean, you have to really enjoy what you do and look at it as a learning experience versus work. Like, it was never work to me. You know, it was never work. It was just so much fun to learn about all these different ingredients in food. And the guy that let me apprentice at his restaurant was growing his own herbs and his own produce on his property and had a smoker. And it was like, wow, this is amazing. And they were doing farm to table, you know, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, giving away my age. But, you know, I learned a lot. And baking was just something that it was more relaxing than anything, kind of like barbecue, you know, in a way.
Right. You know, because right now, also with baking, during this crisis that we're in, people are baking like crazy. Flour is hard to come by. Forget yeast. You cannot find yeast anywhere. Everybody's becoming a baker, you know, during this. And it's just, I mean, it's, I understand, you know, it's that whole, one of the reasons that we do barbecue, like you were saying, you know, it's just, it's that back to, you know, slow down, just.
Right. Back to basics. You know what I
mean? Back to basics.
And it's very comforting. It's very comforting to make barbecue, to make bread. I see a lot of people making bread. I did a beer cheese bread last weekend because I couldn't find the yeast. But I was able to order it off of eBay. I ordered some yeast in a couple bread pans because I feel like, you know, I might as well get in on that too. You know, the weekend before that, I did a brisket and a pork butt. Okay. And I just wanted to just be relaxed out by the pit and feel that the comfort of smelling the hickory burning, you know?
Yeah.
So everybody, you can reach Ray at www.bbqbuddha.com. Check out his website, check out his product, check out this book. As we're wrapping up, Ray, any final words you want to say about the book? Anything else you want to plug?
Well, you know, as far as the book goes, there's 10 great sauces, but there's also a lot of different really delicious rubs, brines, and marinades that are going to flavor up your food and help you keep it tender. I hope people get it and they're inspired to cook with it. And I just want to say thanks for checking it out.
And by the way, his sauces, BBQ Buddha, his sauces, they're all natural. So you don't have to worry about giving your family anything that's unhealthy. Fantastic, fantastic product. I'm telling you, we wouldn't have him on for the third time if we, and this is the third of hopefully many, if we did not believe in what he has as a product. So, guys, you really check him out. We met him the same time we met Lisa Getter from Barbecue Guru. I think that trip to Atlantic City, Jeff, really, we hit the jackpot on that one.
We did. We certainly did. And Ray, we really appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to talk to us about your book and Barbecue Buddha. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me on.
Wow. Jeff, I every time we speak to Ray, he always gives us some new barbecue advice, something new that I just want to run outside and start grilling. And today is a cold day, too. We're having some unusually cold weather when we're recording this. And yet I still want to whip up some of the sauce and just go make a rack of ribs, or it doesn't even have to be ribs. That's the thing. One of the things that barbecue, you always wonder when you see these sauces is, oh, well, do I use this on chicken? Do I use this on fish? Can I use it on, you know, how can I use this? And the great thing about the book is he doesn't just give you the sauces. He tells you how you can use them. It gives you some tips. Great book. You should definitely buy it.
Absolutely. Check out his website.
Seal of approval.
BBQBuddha.com.
And now, Jeff, we have to conclude the show. Last but certainly not least, and this is one I have been looking forward to, and I know you've been looking forward to a long time. for anyone familiar with this show, we get to the end. We used to put on different music, and I'm not saying that there'll come a time when we won't put on other music, but we were sent a song by Dave Dresser and Shel Krakowski. It's called Baseball Always Brings You Home, and we have been playing it at the end of the show, and we have been getting such wonderful feedback on this song. People love it. We love it. That's why we keep playing it. Right now, we had the honor of speaking to the creators of that song, Dave Dresser and Shel Krakowski. I think you're going to really enjoy this interview.
Absolutely. So here's our interview with Dave and Shel.
Thanks to our two guests, we have seen a large increase in downloads by our neighbors to the north. One is a poet and the other a musician. Together, they have given us Baseball Always Brings You Home, a song that has very quickly become one of our favorites and with which we enjoy ending the show. Two of Canada's favorite sons join us on Baseball and Barbecue, and we are so excited to welcome Dave Dresser and Shel Krakowski to Baseball and Barbecue. Welcome, guys.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Real treat to be in the Big Apple.
That's
true. Glad to have you here. So, guys, yes. Dave and Shel, love the song. My first question, I guess, is how do you guys two guys come up and collaborate on that song?
Well, maybe I'll start that off. So this is Dave speaking. Shel and I have actually worked together for a while. I think we've written probably, six or seven songs, Shel?
Six or seven memorable ones.
Memorable ones, yeah. And so we've been working together for a while, and Shel definitely, well, we both really have an interest in baseball. A while back, Shel brought me these words and said, you know, this is all about baseball. What do you think you can do with this? And I took it away for a little while and worked on a few different things and basically put together some ideas, and we went back and forth with it for a while. The what you hear is the end result of that, but yeah, it's basically, we've got a great partnership. Shel does all the words and lyrics, and I put the music together. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. Shel, I don't know if you've got anything you want to add to that.
Well, he's being overly modest. He's making it sound like I slipped it under his door and he came up with a song. Basically, I'm an old knuckleball pitcher, and the odd time I'll hit a corner. But Dave's, he's in baseball terms, he's got all five tools. So I gave him the words, and then he actually changed a few of them to fit in with the music. But the man can sing, the man can write music, he plays a mean guitar, plays other instruments, puts it all together, he produces it, he engineers it. His role in this is quite primary. And I knew within 3 seconds that it was going to be a terrific song when he just got inspired by starting it with honky tonk music. And the only thing I had said to him before he started with it, I said, I at some point you should get some organ into it. And then it started, like, I saw the first 3 notes were honky tonk, and I knew we were off to the races. And then there was just, you know, tweaking, and you know that old joke about it needs a little bit more cowbell and stuff like that. But
how did you guys meet? Tell us about how you met.
Shel, I'll let you answer that question.
Okay. This is unusual, to say the least. I'm a retired doctor, or as my wife says, a recovering doctor. And Dave was my, and still is, my portfolio manager at a financial institution that only does doctors. Now, how long have you been my advisor? I don't even know how many years.
Oh, it's been a few years now.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. If I said 10, would that be right? Or
that might be, yeah. Maybe not
okay,
quite.
Close,
it's been a long time.
Close to 10. And in one of our meetings 3 or 4 years ago, he mentioned just offhandedly that he played in a band. I think he was asking me if I had any hobbies or anything, and I sort of shrugged. He said, well, I play in a band. And that was that. And he didn't know that I wrote. And I didn't write music. I just, you know, I wrote poetry, fiction, sort of academic essays, that sort of thing. And I said, well, if you're ever playing in London, because it was with a touring band called The Upside of Maybe. And I had heard of it, actually. And that's what all he said. And then I said, well, if you're ever, you know, in this neighborhood, give me a shout. We'll see if we can come. And as it turned out, I couldn't when he did invite me. And I think I was having a poetry book launching a couple of years ago, and I invited him. He couldn't come. So bottom line was he didn't know my poetry, and I didn't know his music. And then last year, I had retired, and I just had another book published. And something got into my brain that I wanted to write a country and music, country and western song, something I'd never done. So, well, never mind a country and western, I'd never written a song. But, and I didn't know the mechanics of it. So at the end of our last meeting of, what, 2018, I guess it would have been, and just at the very end of it, I gave him a piece of paper. I said, I know, you know, you're a musician. I don't know if you can encourage me or help me, but I put the words down to a song, and I think it's a country and western song, but I don't know the structure. Do you think this works? And he just looked at it for 5 seconds, then he had to go on to his next client. I guess the next night or the night after that, I got an email from him, and it said he liked the song, but it's not really a country and western song. It's more a ballad and should be played in a minor key. I say, hey, this guy sounds like he knows what he's talking about, minor key. You know, that's professional talk. He said, do you mind if I work on it? And then he explained in this email that he doesn't write music for other people, but he does write for himself. He writes music for himself, and he actually records it. And if I wanted to, I could go to his website and look at what he does. And if I like what he's doing, I could give him the go-ahead to play with this song. And I'll do a commercial for him. The website is called davedressermusic.bandcamp.com. Bandcamp is one word.
Well, thanks, Shell.
Okay, there you go.
And it's okay. We want you to plug away. That's fine.
Okay. We encourage you. I went to that site that night, and I started listening to his music. And I go, this guy's for real. I mean, I write, but I, you know, I don't do music, but this guy's for real. He's got a sweet voice. You can actually understand the words that he says. His music, he's got a variety of music that he plays. I had no idea how he was doing this. And anyway, I emailed him back. There's no conversations at this point. I emailed him back. I, you know, wow, you know, this is a treat for me. Go ahead. And and that was that. And he said, well, when I get around to it, I'll let you know. And then I'd say approximately 6 weeks later, get an email with an MP3 file, and there's my music, his music to my words, and I was flabbergasted. It was so good. It was really, really good, his music. And then we went back and forth, and this is all email, didn't speak. Then I would, you know, I'd say, well, maybe it needs a little more, you know, jokingly, cowbell, and this needs to be pronounced a little bit better. Within a week or so, it was out. It was out on his site, and it was picked up by the CBC within 2 weeks.
CBC being the...
I don't know. What's that?
Oh, I'm just saying the CBC is the national broadcasting company here in Canada.
It's like having your first song picked up by NPR and played on the national network.
Right.
And not only that, we got a royalty.
Nice.
Which we still haven't had time to spend. And they actually put it in the National Archive. I said, boy, that was great. And then Dave actually made a video of it, and the video was well accepted, and it was played at some film festival. So were we going to be one-hit wonders or not? Well, it turns out we had more stuff in us, and we work well together, and really enjoy working with him. And we... a lot of our musical interests are the same, but his abilities are way, way better than mine. So my input is minimal. Like, basically, I like it or I don't like it, and 9 times out of 10, I like it. So,
well, Shell's being very humble there. If it wasn't for the words, then we wouldn't have anything to work with. So it's, I think we work well together. It's we each bring something to the table, and when you put it together, it's I think a good result for sure.
Well, when you sent it to us way back when, a couple months ago, we loved it, and obviously we're playing it on as the outro on our podcast. So we thank you for, you know, sending to us. It was fantastic. We love it.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw that. I think I might have, because you sent it to our Gmail address, and you said, you know, you might be interested in this. And I was excited that somebody just sent something to our Gmail address, let alone a song. Wow. And it was great.
Well, no, I listened to your show before I sent it, and I said, boy, this is quirky and funny, and, you know, this is my kind of show. And I actually listened to it a couple of times before I sent anything in. Like, well, let me interview for a second. How did you come up with a combination of barbecue and baseball?
Oh, well, Jeff, go ahead. Tell the story.
We go back quite a ways. When our children are now grown. They were small. They got together. They're friends. And we'd always hang out together. And we'd always talk baseball because we both love the Mets and baseball. And Glenn is a big barbecuer. So we'd have barbecues back and forth. And we just talk and about baseball and barbecue. And, you know, Len goes, or I go, you know, this could be a podcast. We just record it and put it out there, see what happens. And lo and behold, we did. And we, you know, we had a couple of road bumps, you know, trying to find our way. We had some features, but, you know, it turned out that now we're getting interviews with baseball people and barbecue people, you guys.
Yeah, I agree. We have had some great guests, but I think tonight is the pinnacle. I think you guys, this is it. Jeff, we can't do any better. This is it. We stop. So, you know, Jeff and I were talking all the time and saying this would make a good podcast. We were arrogant enough to think that our baseball talk and barbecue thrown in, of course, people would actually want to listen to it. I mean, I think we were the last schmucks that didn't have a podcast.
Right.
We were like, everybody has a podcast.
You know, well,
so we found our niche.
Can you listen to our podcast? Say, well, if you can listen to my podcast, everybody.
Well, it's like when I first started writing poetry and you went to give a poetry read, you were just reading to other poets because and they were hoping you would come to their reading because their mother-in-law didn't want to come anymore.
I got to ask you guys, in the song, there's a couple of things. Red Hots. Now, you show hot dogs each time. Red Hots, is that a hot dog in Canada? Or is that...
I thought it was a hot dog in the States. But to me, you know, doesn't the guy go up and down the aisles going, get your Red Hots and cold beer?
No. I don't... Red Hots, in here, Red Hots, they were this candy. They were like these... I don't think they sell them
right,
anymore.
Okay.
They were this little candy, and they were actually, you know, hot when you ate them. But you call hot dogs, yeah, we call them Frankfurters,
yep.
Hot dogs.
Wieners.
Yeah. Right.
I
thought that was, you know, sort of a universal vernacular for a hot dog was a red hot.
Maybe that's okay. Maybe it's a Canadian thing.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Speaking of Canadian.
And then I got to ask you, you have the words, I'm not going to try and sing it, but playing hooky opening day. Granny and Gramps alive the next day.
Right.
What is that?
Oh, well, I thought that was a universal phenomenon. That opening day, when I was a kid, your Bubby and Zeta died because your father took you to the baseball game. And the excuse was he took you out of school because your grandmother or your grandfather had died. And then, but that... Didn't you have that in the States, opening day?
Yeah.
Oh, we do have opening day,
sure.
But hopefully nobody dies.
No, but that was the whole point. That was right. The law. And we used it all the time. Now, I'm sure we got it from the Americans. You mean we invented hooky on opening day?
Oh, no. That's universal.
That's universal.
Yeah, that's what that line was about.
Right.
We played hooky on opening day, and gotcha. God bless them, they were alive the next day.
So, obviously, both baseball fans. What part of Canada are you in, and what's your favorite baseball team up there? Is it, well, I guess it's the Blue Jays now. I'm thinking Montreal is, I know that they might come back. I guess you're Blue Jays fans?
They might.
Yeah,
they might.
So we're in London, Ontario. Well, I'm in London, and Shell lives just outside of London in a little town called Kamoka. And so London's about, well, it would be pretty much halfway between Detroit and Toronto. And actually, a lot of people in London are Detroit fans. I'm certainly a Blue Jays fan. I actually spent some of my childhood in Toronto. And I actually remember watching on TV the very first Blue Jays game. I think that was 1977. Mm-hmm. I don't know how old.
I was there too.
Well, I would have been 12, I think. And that was like, it was snowing. There was snow on the ground at the old Exhibition Stadium. I think the Jays won that game, if I recall.
They won it, and Doug Ault hit two home runs.
Well, there you go.
Do you remember that?
I have a vague recollection of that.
That was his claim to fame, and that was his last season.
Yeah.
He was like, you had a show on the other week about guys that were up for a cup of coffee.
And the book.
Doug Ault, he came down from a baseball league, don't laugh when I tell you this, from Alaska. And he came and played an opening day and hit two home runs and was basically never heard from again.
Yeah, that's right.
So that, baseball is full of stories like that.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we just spoke to Brett Topel, who is an author, and he has a video thing, BT Talks Baseball. And one of his guests, and Jeff, please say the guy's name. I cannot say his name.
Frank Conolano.
That's a hard one.
He played series and went 6-for-6 during one game.
Right?
Wow. Frank really? Avano. Yeah.
Yeah. Played for your Blue Jays.
Wow.
So now, Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. Have you guys been there?
Yes. I was actually the opening act when it opened 1997. I was the guest speaker, if you can believe it.
Wow, that's great.
Dave and I went back there about 6 months ago, maybe less, to do some of the filming for the actual song Baseball Always Brings You Home. And I've gone back there a couple of times as an invitee and other times just to go for the ceremonies. But it's quite nice. It's a small town. The Baseball Hall of Fame, they've expanded it quite nicely. It's a pleasant small town experience, and that's what baseball is really all about. You know, that sort of that big game in the small town.
Right.
That's the I've always been attracted to it because of that. When I go to a baseball game, to me, it's like a neighborhood picnic. You know, they lay out the grass as if it's a mat, and you know everybody. And if you don't know them, you're friendly with them. And even if the guy's rooting for the other team, there's this camaraderie. And when it breaks up, you go home. Baseball always brings you home.
Dave, I can't profess to be a proficient in guitars, but you have a picture. I think, well, you have Dave Dresser Music on Facebook, and right. I think you're holding a red guitar, an electric guitar. I asked my son, I said, what is that? He said, it's a Gibson. Are you like other musicians where you have multiple guitars?
Yeah, I have to confess, I'm guilty as charged. And actually, your son is almost right. It's very close to being a Gibson, but it's actually a company called Collings, which are made in Austin, Texas. It's kind of a copy of a Gibson ES-335. Does your son play guitar?
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I could easily see why someone would make that connection that it's a Gibson. And it looks very much like a Gibson guitar. But, yeah, I've got a lot of guitars. I've got banjos. I've got acoustic instruments. Basically, all kinds of stringed instruments. And I love them all. I wish I could had time to play them all. But, no, that's really my main instrument. When you hear the song that I've recorded, a lot of it you'll hear, like, drums and piano and stuff like that. I'm not really a player of those instruments, so I do a lot of that with kind of programming. Right. But, you know, all of the there's a little bit of banjo on that tune, so you hear me playing the banjo. And so, yeah, I dabble in all that kind of stuff and just love it. So,
but tell your son to get a day job. Yeah, tell him.
Well, you know, he was actually – this podcast doesn't overly excite him, but when I told him that Dave was going to be on, that he was a musician, that made him, he was like, oh, really? That was, he got excited.
Well, tell him to check out Collings Guitars. He'll like Collings.
Collings Guitars, okay.
Yeah.
We'll tell him.
Is he into baseball at all?
He was when he was younger, yeah. But not now.
No, my son's the one in baseball.
Right.
The reason I really love baseball for kids is it's because it's the only team sport where it's not a ball or a projectile that scores. Think about it. In this crazy world where the individual's been lost and it's competitive and impersonal, it's the individual that scores, not a puck or a football or a ball.
Right.
And how does he score? Not by overcoming territory. He scores by the most beautiful thing of all. He comes home. And the best part of it, he comes safely home. Now, no other sport can compete with that beautiful aspect of life, especially in this day and age.
That's great imagery there. I mean, I love that.
Yeah. And that's where the title of the song comes from.
Right.
Baseball always brings you home, whether you're playing it or you're watching it, or even if when you're all alone, there's something about it that is pastoral. There's an ideal to it, and everybody gets a chance to play. There's an order to it. You can play hockey or basketball, and if they don't call your number in football, you can go a whole game with nothing. But in baseball, everybody gets a shot. It's this democratic aspect of the game called the batting order. And the manager and the coaches, they're dressed exactly the way you are. They're not walking up and down the sidelines like Wall Street bankers, which some of them are, I guess. No, I think it's the best game for kids. Soccer's good too. Don't get me wrong, but I grew up with baseball.
Well, now in Canada, I'm going to guess, or I think it is still, hockey is number one sport. Is that?
Oh, absolutely.
True? Oh, yeah. That's okay. Tell me where in the other sports, and well, I know you have Canadian League football, but you have basketball, of course, and I mean, you have all the sports. Has baseball rank? Has baseball gained in popularity, or since the Expos left, where's it fit in?
Well, it's certainly not as big as it was when the Expos and the Blue Jays were here. Now, its apex was 92 and 93 when they won back-to-back World Series. But in New York, you don't know that, do you?
You know that.
Oh, do you?
I remember Joe Carter around those bases.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of our players went on to, not a lot, but a few went on to play for the Mets after that was over. I believe John Olerud was the Met. I think it was both a Yankee and a Met.
Right.
Yeah. So did Robbie Alomar play for the Mets too at some point?
Who?
Robbie Alomar.
Yes. Alomar did. Carlos Delgado.
Not well, though.
Right, Carlos Delgado. So some of our best.
Yeah.
You know, didn't we got him ready for you.
We got David Cone from the Mets, didn't
That's
we?
That's true.
Yeah, that was the other way around.
Yeah.
And Robbie Alomar wasn't good for the Mets, believe not.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, he was. That was towards the end of his.
Yeah.
There was one wonderful line. Wonderful line written about him the first couple of years he was here. There's a female sports writer who said of Robbie Alomar, half the women in this country want to be Robbie Alomar's mother.
Uh-huh.
The other half have other ideas.
So guys, what are some of your favorite baseball memories, Dave?
Well, the World Series wins. I mean, those were amazing. And actually, we had a little sniff at maybe a bit better success, I guess about 2015. The whole drama with Bautista, doing the bat flip and all that. I'm sure everybody else hated the Blue Jays and hated him. I mean, it was kind of cheeky. There's no doubt about that. But being a Blue Jays fan, I mean, it was something else. And I guess similar to what happened with the Raptors, last year, because we only have one baseball team in Canada, they really are our national team now that the Expos are gone. So, I mean, there was a lot of excitement, during those couple of years where they were, went pretty far. But yeah, I remember, I think it was Blue Jays, I guess it was Atlanta, I think that they beat. And I remember the Atlanta fans doing the old tomahawk.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it was fun.
Come on, Jeff.
And then it was sweet when I think Alomar hit a home run and he comes around, you know, he's
and he did the tomahawk.
The tomahawk chop right, I think right there in Atlanta. And, you know, those are some fun memories. But unfortunately, we haven't had as much to cheer about lately with the Blue Jays. They're doing one of those rebuilds again. And they got a few young players that have shown some promise, but I think they're a ways out still. So may have to be patient still for a while. I just can't wait for baseball to come back. I mean, it's sad sitting here and, you know, we should be watching baseball and excited about it. It's just not happening. And that's
yeah, when you watch the reruns, the results don't change, so that's no fun.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Here in New York, we have the Mets channel and the Yankees channel, and they never lose. They're always winning. It's great. So, Shel, what are your favorite memories? Obviously, the World Series and Joe Carter.
Well, actually, yeah. I'll tell you, and I'm opening day, I remember that forever. And World Series, yes, but actually I have another memory, and here I'll go against the grain. I loved the Bautista bat flip. That spoke to me. I thought it was great sportsmanship, by the way, as opposed to poor sportsmanship. He was just showing, he didn't hurt anybody, but he was just showing honest to God emotion. I thought that was fair in terms of the stress of that moment. And the other favorite time is, it was, at the World Series, but my other favorite time was after they won the two consecutive World Series, Dahlia, my wife and I, we went down to spring training the following year. So that would have been 94. And they two-time world champs. And if you've ever been to spring training, it's a wonderful experience. Everybody's loosey-goosey. The veterans are going to make the team most of the time. And you see all these young pups, you know, really running their butts off. And the practice, you go out there early at the practice diamonds and you see guys that might make it a couple of years later. And, you know, the fellas that have been there for a million years that aren't going to make it this year. And you get to talk to everybody. Everybody's accessible to you. And it's a combination of stress and casual. And I really remembered that spring training.
Running low on time here. Look, one of our favorite baseball players played in Montreal for a couple of years, and that's Rusty Staub. Could you tell me about your memory of Rusty Staub? Because I know he really ingrained himself when he went to Montreal. He spoke the language. He fit in with the fans. So could you tell us anything about Rusty?
Well, I actually met him that spring training, I guess, 67. It was a 67 or 68. Dahlia and I actually went down to Florida, and we saw their first spring training, and I actually saw him. I knew, you knew he was going to be something special, just the way he interacted with the fans. He made himself accessible. And I think the greatest tribute to him from Montreal is they gave him a French name, Le Grand Orange.
Right.
You know, they gave him his own identity rather than adopting what he came with. I can't think of another. It's certainly in hockey there would be French-Canadian names, but I can't think of another baseball player who had a French-Canadian name. So he was a favorite for sure.
Dave, do you remember Rusty?
You know what? I
might have been after your time.
Before my time, yeah. And actually, it's a long story, but I actually grew up in Indonesia. Didn't actually come really to start living in Canada until I was really around that age of 12 or so. And so I missed out on baseball up until about that point in time. But, the Expos were still going, you know, in the early days. Rusty Staub, I remember the name, but a little bit before I started paying attention to baseball.
You know who I really liked on the Expos? Ellis Valentine.
Oh, yeah.
He had a rifle for an arm. I just remember that. And then he came to the Mets, actually. I liked him when he was with Montreal. Just remember
my favorite was Pedro Martinez.
Oh yeah.
He was full of fire and he wasn't that big, so I identified with him. And he had a nice personality. He was warm to the fans.
How do you think Toronto's gonna do this year? If If we have a season, hopefully we have a season, but how do they look?
Well, not to use the pun, but right now they're in the basement. All of us are in the basement waiting to get out. You know, I think anybody who gets to play that first game is a winner automatically. We're just waiting for it so desperately. Just staying at home and indoors is it's not very good.
I don't know if what's gonna happen. I mean, who knows? This whole thing is how far do you think we get before they say, you know, scratch? I don't even, you know, it's too negative. Forget it. Forget I asked that.
Yeah, you don't want to talk about scratch.
I'm not going there.
No, the other thing that's hanging over baseball, of course, is the scandal with the Astros. How, when they come back, how that's going to play out, or will it be forgotten because people are so excited about getting back to baseball? Hard to say.
Just today, didn't they announce some penalties that I guess a lot of people thought weren't sufficient?
For the Red Sox.
Yeah.
What was it, the video guy?
Yeah, the video guy got just slammed.
Yeah.
Right.
So, Dave, I see where the clock is up against us. Where can we find your music?
You can find
it right here. Dresser Music, one word, .bandcamp, one word, bandcamp, like summer camp, one word, then .com.
And also on Facebook, you can find everything that Sean and I have done together just under Dave Dresser Music. So anybody who's interested.
Or either of our names and then YouTube. Then they can see videos.
Yeah.
I love that song. I love that song where it's like the Canadian. It's very patriotic.
Oh, yeah.
It starts out with the Native Americans in the canoe, I think. You know,
all right, yeah.
Yeah.
Wave really the Red like and White. You've seen that.
Yeah.
That's a great song that he wrote.
Yeah. Well,
thank you for that. Appreciate that.
You guys are fantastic. Thank you for spreading the word in Canada. Because it can't just be a coincidence that since you guys had your music on, all of a sudden Canadians are listening to our podcast.
We're pitching it a lot up here. So we really appreciate your support. It means a ton to us.
And, thank you.
We can't say thank you enough for all the support, and love the fact that you guys enjoy it. That's
the validation. And we like, you know, we both like your show. So that's
thank you.
That's great.
I can't say I'm much on barbecue, but
thank you for
that. That's why I didn't even ask you any barbecue questions.
I got to be honest, I'm a takeout kind of guy.
Okay. Thank you both for joining us. We really appreciate it. And much success to you guys. Thank you.
To you too.
Thanks for Dave Dresser and Shel Krakowski for coming on to our show. And that was a terrific interview. They really get along great. I mean, you can just tell the camaraderie between them.
Yeah, baseball always brings you home. I want to have them back on, so they have to write another song for us. I mean, I'd like to have them back on just to talk, but they'll get on a lot faster. Write us another song.
Yeah.
What a song. Really, they didn't write it for us, but I feel like for our show, it really fits. Now they have to write a barbecue song.
Yes.
They can write a song that has baseball and barbecue in it. I mean, they have the hot dogs in the song, although they call those Red Hots, right?
Right.
But they have that in the song, but they could have a song with baseball and barbecue, or a barbecue song, and then we can mix them up. But guys, that's our challenge to you, and thanks for coming on.
Yes, thank you, guys. And now, Len, bring us home.
Baseball Always Brings You Home by none other than Dave Dresser and Shel Krakowski. Sorry that we have to end the show, but glad that we get to end it with this song. Can't wait to talk to you guys again. Jeff, can't wait to speak to you again. See you soon.
Okay, see you.